Yeah, I'm gonna go
with an 8-win floor this season. I don't know what I expect them to reach, but I'm gonna go 8-win floor. The wide receiver room scares me, and I think Brock Purdy, if he's able to be as good as he is, and if that receivers, if they don't like really step up or whatever, now he's just not him. I think you can get him to 8 wins, but after that, we'll see.
And that's the other thing too. You brought him up, Brock Purdy. I agree with you. Now you're getting paid like one of the big boys. I need you to.
Yeah, there's no excuses at this point. Like I know Ayuk's coming off the ACL, and just we don't really know what Pearsall is, and Jennings is a wide receiver 3-1 on whatever given day.
Yeah,
you got to make him better, and you got to get wins here. Like you're the quarterback. You're paid to do that. Unfair or not, that's just what the game is now.
And I believe in Brock. I believe that Brock can be that type of quarterback where he helps elevate others around him. I know they were talking earlier today on the morning roast to my guys over there on the morning roast. Shout out to Spadoni. Shout out to Butcher Boy. And they were asking, you know, at the end of the season, will Brock Purdy be the unquestioned best quarterback in the division? And a lot of people were like, no, Brock isn't that good. I know somebody was like, yeah, Brock, outside of pre-snap reads, what does he do really well? Like, just kind of like.
He's the second best quarterback in the division for me right now.
Yeah, Brock Purdy.
I love Kyler,
really,
but Kyler's
good.
Just been a lot of our imagination at this point.
Kyler.
Where, like, he's good, but it just hasn't amounted to anything yet.
Kyler is super talented. He's a good quarterback, but I would say. Best case scenario, he's even with Brock Purdy right now. And Brock Purdy, they talk about what does he do? I've said a number of different times, his accuracy, his pinpoint accuracy with where his ball placement is on some of these throws, you can't walk it up any better. What he lacks in arm strength and physical abilities, he makes up for with his anticipation and his ball placement and his pre-snap reads.
Yeah, there's other ways to play the quarterback position. I'm sorry, not everyone needs to be a 6'10", throw it 90 yards down the field type quarterback.
Right.
Like Josh Allen and those guys that can do it, yes, that's why they're elite of the elite, but it doesn't always work for everyone else. And for the Brock Purdy's of the world, yeah, you need to be more accurate and stuff because you're not, arm strength isn't great or whatever. Like, that's a plus.
Yeah, Drew Down
not
in the chat.
Not necessarily a downside.
You know, I think he got hacked by TC. Drew Down's YouTube got hacked by TC. He says Kyle needs to just stay out of Brock's way this year.
Yeah, TC actually called in. I think it was this show last week with D'Lo. And he's like, oh, yeah, King's that. Oh, so excited. Yeah, yeah. 49ers, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Kyle sucks, blah, blah, blah. And we were kind of like, what's going on? Like, why are you so optimistic about the Kings who have done nothing and the so down the Niners who have won a lot or whatever? But he called back the next day. He's like, yeah, it's Kyle. He's out on Kyle Shanahan. He's just not a Kyle Shanahan. Doesn't matter what happens. He's just out on Kyle.
He's out on Kyle. I saw something the other day, or yesterday, excuse me, that, and I think Bonte had tweeted it out, and he responded the same way that I'm about to say it, but it was some NFL question, you know, on one of those shows, and they were like, yeah, Kyle Shanahan has to prove that he can win the big game. He's lost in the overtime to the Kansas City Chiefs. He's lost them twice in the Super Bowl. He lost to the Patriots when he blew a 28-3 lead against when he was with the Falcons.
It was Chris Broussard, I believe. And that tells you all you need to know
about that. Why is this? I don't understand how that goes on his permanent record.
The funniest
part. He was not the head coach.
Well, the funniest part about the Falcons thing is that Kyle Shanahan's an offensive guy. Dan Quinn's a defensive guy. The Falcons put up 28 points.
On Bill Belichick. That should be good enough to win.
The defense gave up 31 or however many it was after they gave up that three. I think it was like 34-28, the final score. Like, Dan Quinn should catch the heat. Like, the defense lost that game.
Dan Quinn, don't nobody say nothing. They just, he's a great coach here in Washington. This is great. This is a great guy. He's got Washington cooking.
And asking, and maybe I'm being too nice about it or whatever, but asking an NFL team to go score 40 points in the Super Bowl against one of the greatest defensive coaches of all time. Like, you don't think the Patriots are going to figure some things out? It's just don't be historically bad or catastrophically bad on defense. You already got the 28.
Bro, get one stop.
Exactly.
Get one stop and you win. That one always gets me. Aldrin in the chat, he asked a question in the chatty house. Is Brock better than Dak Prescott? Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Now, I don't say that to say Dak is a bum. Dak is cool, but Brock is better than Dak.
Are we sure?
Yes.
Like, Dak was in MVP conversations until, that was last season, right? When they lost to Miami, I think. Like, up until that game.
The same year Brock was in it.
Okay, yeah. Like, Dak's really good. It's just playoffs, he just fumbles.
I'll say
not
this.
Actually, but just when it's go time, he just does not show up.
I'll say this.
He's got all the talent in the world. It's just, like Jerry Jones said.
Well, we have the clip. He said, well, we paid him, and he only played two-thirds of the season.
Also, I'm disappointed, too, that Stanley has not called him once. Every time you do that voice, look at the caller ID to wait and see if it'll be him. Like, Stanley, it's a pretty big guess.
Well, look, Stanley knows. I've talked to Stanley. I've had conversations with him, and he knows I've got this handled. Just like he requested a couple of months back, I'm in the talks to buy KIFM and buy ESPN 1320 and make sure D'Lo and KC work for me. And when D'Lo comes back, we're going to have a celebratory dinner at Morton's, that's for sure.
That guy stinks.
I'll say this about Dak and Brock Purdy. I think they're on the same tier.
That's fair enough.
So it's not like Brock is like just leaps and bounds better than him. I think they're the same type of quarterback for sure. I didn't want to let this time go by without talking about this Raiders, man. You said you had your eye on the Raiders.
I think they might be good. I think they might be a
playoff.
Maybe. Whoa. I'm not gonna say they're gonna win the division. I wouldn't be shocked if it's week 18 or whatever the NFL has us watching at this point. The Raiders are in the hunt, and not even in the hunt where it's like, oh, they need four teams to lose today and win by 30 or whatever. Like, they're going to have a high I don't even love this because it's the Raiders, but I think they could have a high floor this year where it's like Geno is going to keep the offense just a little bit at bay. And, like, Pete Carroll, I guess I believe in coaching more than you do. Pete Carroll's one of the greatest coaches of all time. I think that counts for something.
No, I'm a believer in
Pete. Like, I think that's going to get you wins. You look at the Chargers last year with Jim Harbaugh. I think a lot of us were talking about, oh, yeah, cupboard's kind of bare. Running backs don't look great. Wide receivers don't look great. But he just had them playing sound football, just fundamental football, and got them into the playoffs. They got waxed when they got there. But I think I could see that type of year for the Raiders potentially.
Hmm.
I'm not willing to guarantee it or anything like that. But, like, maybe Christian Wilkins stays healthy on the defensive line. You got Max Crosby. Some linebackers look a little solid. I like Landon Roberts in the run game and all that, run defensive game, but I got my eye on them. So I can see some things. Wide receiver room is also not great there. You got Brock Bowers, but Jacoby Myers is your wide receiver one I don't love.
Let me ask you two things real quick. So were you on the fence, and then yesterday when they signed Jamal Adams, did that one take you over the top?
No, that kind of sent me the other way. We're signing linebackers again at safety. Like, all right, but
see, that's why people think that's Pete Carroll's guy. The Raiders.
Well, Jamal Adams, like that's a universal joke. That's a linebacker playing safety. What are you doing, bro? And if anything, that's an edge rusher playing safety. But like you, like Tyler Jennings throws in a rookie running back. I like Ashton Jeanty. I think he's got superstar potential. I think he can be a guy where like he'll have an impact just all season for the Raiders. And if he's able to do that, then it's going to make things a lot easier for Geno and Co. I see the vision, at least.
I see a lot of the things that you're talking about with this Raiders team.
Yeah, I'm not willing to guarantee anything or just put it on wax just yet or anything, but I see it. I'm kind of, like I said, I'm watching with an eye.
This is why my expectations for the Raiders never reach potentially a certain height this season. For them to even think about the playoffs, I'd have to say that they're going to be better than one of the Broncos, Chargers, or Chiefs. And I just don't see that right now. I don't see it. I don't think four teams get into the playoffs from the AFC West.
Like I said, I think they'll be in the hunt, in the mix. I think they can be. I don't know if they will be. I could see them being better than the Chargers. It's a lot of I'm not going to go out and say the Raiders are the second best team in the division right now. Put them at four, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of we need to see it happen. But like I said, just with the parts that they got, I see the vision, Loki.
Mm-hmm.
I can see them 8-9 this year or something like that, 9-8. I'm not even necessarily saying they'll be the Niners, 10 wins or anything like that, but I think they're going to surprise some people this year.
I do like some of the pieces that they've been able to put together. They had so much that they had to do with that roster. I don't think you can do the majority of it in one off season. So going out and getting Geno's an okay quarterback. He has some really good moments with Seattle, but when it started to get a little tight, like when people started to get a little bit more of a book on what was going on with Geno in Seattle, they started to shut all that down. So I wonder if that's going to be what potentially happens with the Raiders. Yeah, I like Genty. I like Bowers, obviously. I like Pete Carroll. I'm a believer in Pete Carroll.
You see Chip Kelly telling Genty not to do his stance in the backfield?
No.
Yeah, that's not even a story, but just a little note. He wants him, I guess, just not doing his little signature thing or whatever, which I hate. I don't know why Chip Kelly's trying to switch things up, but more traditional running back stance, I guess, but
Chip Kelly hasn't done much of anything since Oregon.
Yeah, Chip, just call the plays, bro.
Yeah, that's it. You're lucky you're getting this
reason why you drafted me here.
Yeah. You're lucky
you're getting this story, just a note I saw.
Yeah, you're lucky we didn't leave your ass in Columbus. You know, that's tough. Might have been where you should have been. So settle down. Settle down, Chip. But I think the Raiders, and I'm interested to see them in training camp, see if there's some other rookies, some other young guys that jump out and leap off the page and see if they can be somebody that could help this team immediately, because they do need some help at the wide receiver position. They do need some help in the secondary. So if there's some rookies, some young players, some guys that they found that might be able to help them immediately that we're not taking account for, I could up that floor a little bit more. But that division just a little too tough for me.
Yeah, I get it. Like I said, it's just an eye right now. I'm going to say it's a good eye or anything like that. Could be a lazy eye at the end of the season. It's like, oh, yeah, look at the Raiders falling off again.
I forgot. We'll see. I was supposed to say it during.
Yeah, don't even say it right now. We're going to break. We're good. Don't even mess it up. I don't even know what you were going to say. It could be fine. But like I said, let's just go to break.
We're going to go to break. We got my man, Daryl Guru Johnson, the 95.7 The Game. He's going to rock in with us, man. And we're going to have a good time talking about the Cowboys, talking about the Warriors, talking about the 49ers, and maybe talking about R&B. Maybe we'll talk about a little R&B with my man Guru. He's coming up next on D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. Back here on D'Lo and KC, ESPN 1320. Having a good time on this Wednesday afternoon. We've been talking about the weather and stuff. The last couple's a little cooler and stuff. I think next week it's about to get back up there. Get back up there the way it's supposed to be on a summer day. Oh, that also reminds me too, Jesse, I don't know if you saw the email. Or
I'm looking at him right now. I'm literally looking at him right now.
Yeah, it's great time. Odyssey had a great time at the game today. This was, you know, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to see everybody enjoyed themselves. It was a rousing success. No, it's good stuff.
22 of our coworkers. I just counted the damn picture. 22 of our coworkers there, not us.
Come on, man. Oh, we got, look at that. I didn't even see pictures. Look at this.
Yeah, there's pictures.
Yeah, pictures out there.
Had a great time.
Champagning and campaigning. Is that Jonathan?
Yeah, Jonathan. Engineers
Jonathan
was out there.
Was here. Yo, this is, I'm glad everybody had a great time, man. Look at, yeah, okay. Looks like a beautiful day. Nobody looks hot, anything. Just
no, everyone, what do you want? You want me to be sad, Odyssey?
Should I be a jerk and take a picture of myself in the studio and say,
having the greatest day of my life.
Because I don't know if they understand. I hope they understand when, like, we're joking and I'm having a good time.
Are we joking? Well, I forget. The camera can't even see me. Yeah, we're joking.
Oh, well. I talked about Guru coming on to the show.
Oh, not happening? All right, let me jump back out the bullpen then. YouTube can wait. Hopefully we get running back up later.
That's all. I text Guru.
Here we go.
I text Guru earlier. I was like, yo, man, why don't you come on the show, man? Come out, let me for a second. He goes, yeah, I got you, big dog. He said, can you do the stream? I said, can you do the stream? He goes, yeah, it's nothing. I said, all right, man, my dog, appreciate you. So, you know, it's about 3:15 or so. You know, I don't see him backstage. I said, hey, go. What's up, big dog? You get the link? And he goes, yeah, it's tomorrow, right? I'm on my way to LA.
Well, what do you want to talk about, Casey?
I don't know. We can talk about anything at this point. We can talk. Oh, okay. I do know what I want to talk about. Shout out to Guru. He just got our signals crossed a little bit. We got our signals crossed, but it's all good. Tomorrow probably not going to work for Guru, so I'll have him on at some point in the near future. That's my dog, man. I got to talk to Guru. It's been a minute. Russ Dog asked a question during one of the breaks, and he said, Casey, If DeRozan was okay coming off the bench, would you be okay starting with the starting five of Dennis Schroeder, Zach LaVine, Keegan at the three, Max at the four, and Domas at the five? And Russ Dog is, no pun intended, that's my dog. That's my guy. That's my guy. We rock, and he always shows love. You know what I mean? So this isn't directed towards him. This is more in general. Why is everyone so eager to put DeMar DeRozan on the bench?
So you can play Max, I guess, but that's another thing.
DeMar DeRozan is...
And that's not happening, too.
It's not happening. To people, we talk about, like, oh, it's not happening because of vets and all this other stuff, and people don't like that. It's also not happening because he's probably your second best player. I could make the argument he's your best player.
He's going to be your leading scorer, I think. Maybe LaVine steps it up, but.
I could make the argument that's your best player. And everybody looks at him like he's the problem.
Can I say something as well?
Sure.
I think we got to dial it down on Max a bit.
Mm.
I don't think he doesn't need to be in your starting lineups, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's potential there, but also, like, all right, fine. Like, maybe he wanted to go to the Kings, yada, yada. It's still a second-round pick. I think we got to let him develop a little bit more and see what it's looking like before. It's like, oh, yeah, throw Max. Like, I'm not even saying he's going to be bad or anything like that, but I don't think he's going to have an immediate impact or anything like that.
I think...
Like Nick Clifford might,
yeah.
I guess. I don't see it. Like, Drew Eubanks, I know people don't want to see him play and all that, and that's fine, but if Maxine's better and all that, play him. But I just think... It was more about, like, starting Max at the four. That's dial it back, I think.
I hear you. I definitely hear you on the starting aspect. Like, he's...
Because I wonder defensively, he's going to be able to stay on the court, like, how raw he is there and stuff like that. He's going up against actual, like, NBA players now instead of these summer league guys.
He actually defended a little bit better than maybe I had heard or thought of. Actually, one of the things that was talked about pre-draft was... He was pretty good at protecting the rim for being, you know, 7 foot, 7'2", yeah. Whatever. And he was a little bit of a problem guarding on the perimeter, pick and rolls and things of that nature. And what I saw in the summer league was actually the exact opposite. I thought he did a better job than advertised at guarding people on the perimeter and doing that type of stuff. And there was damn near no rim protection from him. And I was like, that's... odd. I didn't expect to see that. But I'm with you. Like, I don't see him starting or should be in the starting in a conversation about starting.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm not even sure how much of, like, how
he many should, minutes. He should play.
He'll play, but, like, I just don't know how much we'll see of him to start.
He's the rotation. He's in the rotation for me, and I would not have Eubanks over him in the rotation. Where Eubanks might get some tick is backup center situation, or flip it. If Reynaud is the backup center, Eubanks is backup four or something like that. That may be, like, I'm not just throwing Eubanks out completely.
Yeah, when
he doesn't play. But yeah, starting, I'm not with that. And like I said, Russ Dog, that's the homie. That's my guy. But I agree with you on that one, Max. I wouldn't even consider him starting at the four right now. And DeMar DeRozan, he's not going to the bench, and he shouldn't go to the bench. Special Ed in the chat says, because bro is old and not going to be here. Also, the Kings are already lightweight tanking. He's going to win them a few games they probably should lose. They're not tanking.
Yeah, they're not lightweight tanking. They're not super tanking, none of that.
No. Like, tanking is – if they're just bad, then they're just bad. It's not – it's at least at the start of the season. Who knows what happens down the stretch. But at the start of the season, if they're bad – They're just a bad team. It's not on purpose. It's not because that's what the plan was or what they're trying to do. Real quick, because I want to talk about this. Let's flip this just a little bit. Do you have the clip of Zach Lowe?
Yeah, let me pull that up on
Twitter. Talking about the Kings.
Zach Lowe had a couple things on the Kings.
Yeah. He's been talking about the Kings a little bit lately. We'll play it for you so you guys can hear it, get the gist of what he's talking about, and also – you know, I got feelings about it. I got feelings about what he's got to say. But when you talk about DeMar DeRozan, going back to that situation, the guy's arguably your best player, one of your top two players. He's not going to the bench. I continue to ask this question often, and I'll ask it with James too, because I know James has been a detractor of DeMar, not necessarily the basketball player, but DeMar on this team. The offense wasn't a problem. Offensively, I don't think the Kings were an issue. It may not look exactly how you want it to look, or it could be better for sure. Like, you want to improve all the time, but offense wasn't a problem. They were top 10 in scoring last year. The offensive rating, I don't remember that off the top of my head, but it wasn't in the dumps. That wasn't the issue. The issue was they weren't very good on the defensive end. I think they turned the ball over a lot once the De'Aaron Fox trade happened, and that was the lack of the point guard situation. But, yeah, I don't – they talk about the ball stopping and the way he plays on the offensive end and all this other stuff. The top 10 offense, least points per game in the league. So, here's Zach Lowe.
Shout out to the local guy for this clip.
Yeah, shout out to the local guy, man. See him tomorrow. But here's Zach Lowe talking about the Kings. Is this the one when he said
– talking about Summer League?
Yeah.
Dallas and or Minnesota. They have a 2031 swap with the freaking Kings. Any draft – and by the way, one of the talks of Vegas, we're going to get to another depressing team in a second, is just like, what happened to the Kings? Just a complete disaster across the board. And they have a top – they have an unprotected swap with the Kings that they got for facilitating the DeMar DeRozan trade from Chicago to Sacramento. And I think they were very smart.
Pretty much it right there.
Who was he talking about again that got the pick from the DeMar DeRozan trade? Was it the –
I think
was it San Antonio?
San Antonio's got this. Yeah, the Spurs got that pick because we were making fun of that for however long.
But they don't.
That's the 2031, the pick swap. Yeah, I think that's the whole point, though. They got the Kings pick swap. I think he's just expecting the Kings to just be horrible by then or something.
Well, I'm not going to let him off the hook. And I'm not trying to, but he was wrong. Like, he's dead wrong. And I don't think that's a slip up, and that doesn't make the Kings situation better or nothing like that. But he's wrong. He says the Kings gave up an unprotected pick swap. Or excuse me, an unprotected pick to the Spurs. That's not what they gave up. They gave up a pick swap, I believe, in that deal.
Yeah, it's a pick swap. Yeah.
And he's talking about to facilitate DeMar DeRozan trade. Yeah, if that's what he's talking about, he's wrong about that. But all right, whatever. I'm of the belief that whatever executives say about the Kings and they're trying to figure out what went wrong, and they're laughing at the Kings. They talk about they're a disaster. What Zach Lowe says about the Kings, he talked about they're a disaster and all this other stuff. It's all perfectly fair. It's all perfectly fair. It is what they've earned. It's where they're at. Now you have a situation where Monty McNair kind of put them in a tough spot. You don't hear making the decisions. You got a guy like Scott Perry who's making the decisions where I'm not saying he's the second coming, but he's better. And I believe he's better than what they've had over the last decade. And we're going to see if he can work out all this stuff. But whatever Zach Lowe was talking about outside of just the false information about the unprotected pick, but what the circles in the NBA are saying and all this other stuff, it's fair, it's warranted. That's what they get. That's what they deserve.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and, like, we're not going to lie to you about, like, oh, yeah, the Kings are in a good spot. Like, no, they're not. But also, I'm not sure how much of this is, like, Scott Perry's doing going into the season with this roster. No. Like, I think Dennis Schroeder's kind of, like, a make good of what we have here right now. But, I mean, how long do we talk about there being no market for these guys?
Right.
You can want to trade whoever, but if you're not, if you're just getting pennies on the dollars, there's nothing. Then what are you doing then?
I don't even know if people are picking up the phone anymore.
Exactly.
Right now for anybody, not just Devin Carter or Malik Monk or anybody. Like, they're closed for business, it feels like, right now. Maybe it's a situation where a lot of these guys, they'll start talking about it and revisiting these potential trade scenarios once training camp gets closer and you see, okay, well, this is what the team looks like on the court. Maybe it's something like that. But right now, it doesn't even feel like phones are ringing or calls are being picked up. But yeah, man, it's like, this is the situation that they're in. I know a lot of people look at it as a doom and gloom situation with the Kings. I don't necessarily look at it like that. I mean, situations and fortunes change in a heartbeat in this league. And while people aren't seeing a direction for this team right now or seeing a future for this team right now or a path for them to be successful, that could all change in one offseason. That could all change in 1 year. So one thing that I've learned about the NBA, especially this current NBA, is you got to make sure you give things time to develop. And when you talk about a Scott Perry and him inheriting the situation he did here in Sacramento that wasn't his doing, you got to give him an opportunity to work out of that. So
that's the thing, too, because there was an ESPN article. It was like every team's worst decision in the last 5 years. And I thought it was actually Zach Cram, or how do you pronounce his last name? And had the Kings at number 5 out of all the teams. They had, but he put, like, having Tyrese Haliburton and De'Aaron Fox and then losing both of them within 3 years, like, last regime did a lot of damage here that Scott Perry is essentially not going to be able to fix right now.
Yeah,
I mean, like you said, they got set back a lot. Because like when you think about it that way, just having those two guys and just more so, like you just they did nothing for 5 years or whatever besides Beam Team One,
and
now you have nothing. You're kind of stuck with a Zach LaVine where it's like he doesn't have trade value now, and now you're hoping maybe he builds it up. Otherwise, you let him play out final year of his deal. Now you got flexibility and stuff like that. You're waiting to see what happens to DeRozan. They're in a tough spot.
You're in a tough spot, and there was a few different times when I would genuinely, it wasn't trying to be a contrarian or nothing like that, genuinely look at what that previous front office did and say, hey, you know, they did do some good things. And also looking back at the situation when it was like, hey, you got to do something, move on from, you know, go get Pascal or OG, and just being honest with that conversation. It was at the time, the things we were hearing, it was going to cost you Keegan Murray. Would you still be rather to do that? So there were certain situations where they didn't make moves, and I attempted to look at the other side of it or look at the whole situation. But they did horrible. They did horrible. And where I think they did a really bad job is in the draft. You know, that draft, the trade for Herter, messing up your potential for trading with having to pick protections and all that other stuff. It was bad.
It was supposed to be his bag too.
It was awful.
I don't mean to pile on, but like I said, it was just really bad.
It was awful. It set this team back a few years and put them in a hole and in a deficit that they're trying to work out of today.
That they didn't even need to be in either. Like this all could have been avoidable, I feel. Like if you went the De'Aaron Fox route, trade Tyrese, that's fine. Whether we think De'Aaron Fox is a number one or two is one thing, but I do think there was playoff wins to be had with Fox and Sabonis if you built around them the right way. And how many times do we talk about he keeps drafting guards, they keep drafting guards, why are they not bringing in wings, why are they not signing wings? Mm-hmm. Like the team was just never built to the standard of what a normal, successful NBA team is now.
Mm-hmm. It brings up a question.
That's why you just left a lot of meat on the bone. Pause.
Well, all right. I don't have
whatever. Yeah, you don't have a flag. I said pause.
Throw my hat.
It's a sad moment.
Throw my hat. That's what they do when they're out of flags. They throw the hat. I'll ask you this question. It's been asked before. I'll continue to ask it, and I'll ask it to James when he comes on at 3 o'clock. At least that's what I hope James.
James, please, we're really counting on you. I got to cut videos. I got to do work.
That's what I hope is going to happen at 3 o'clock. But, and I know what James may say, and I know what others are going to say. They're like, well, if you would have done your job before and you would have handled business before, you wouldn't have been in this situation. But the reality of the situation is last summer, apparently there are players that were done with Mike Brown. They were not fooling with Mike Brown. And I think some coaches were done with Mike Brown. And you had a situation where you could do a couple of different things. You could stick with Mike Brown, bring him back because De'Aaron Fox wanted Mike Brown around, and you would have kept De'Aaron Fox and said, hey, you know, this is Fox's guy. We'll keep him around. We'll do whatever. But you potentially, if you aren't able to handle it in a correct way, DeMontis Sabonis is still upset. Malik Monk is still upset with Mike Brown. What do you do in that situation if you're Monty McNair?
We've talked about it before. I would have just moved on from them both in the offseason, I think.
You would have moved on from Sabonis?
From Monty and Fox, I mean.
From
So or no, from Mike and Fox. If I'm Monty, I'm moving on from Mike and Fox. Like we've talked about before. Like I just, if half my locker room is out and I got one guy, like I'm gonna keep. Like if that was the situation, then it was over right then and there. Before you traded, before you fired anyone, like it was over right then and there, and it wasn't gonna be salvaged then. Like I think you have to be real with yourself. It's like, yeah, it was over then. There was no going back from that.
Right.
I don't think. Like you can try to trade whoever, whatever player. But ultimately, it was supposed to be Mike, Fox, and Sabonis. Mm-hmm. Once it wasn't, and it was one or the other, or just two or the three, or just whatever you want to throw out, it was done. Mm-hmm. You were not going to make this successful without those guys.
And I wonder, man.
Because then that's where you find yourself kind of just falling down, like, oh, no, like, get Zach LaVine, or, like, doing, like, these little things. Was like, oh, no, try to fix it on the fly. Meanwhile, like, no, it's just, it's done. It's cooked.
I wonder what happened in that situation. I wonder... And this is where, like I said, it always feels like I'm defending Vivek Rana Dive, but...
And maybe you could keep Fox and Mike, but also then fine, trade whatever players aren't with Mike and all that stuff and start the rebuild that way. But ultimately, there was no, oh yeah, we're going to still accomplish the same goals. It was over at that point.
So because of that, what... Man, they made the wrong decision. You know, whatever, however they chose to go about it.
Yeah.
But everybody talks about, man, you had so much going on and you were moving in such a good way. What happened? It feels like none of it was going to work. None of it was going to work. It feels like Beam Team 1 was a mirage.
It was a fluke. It's like I said, it seemed like the Kings, like just they were out of the dysfunction that one year because they were winning. And then time passes and... We see what's happened. It's like, no, they were still dysfunctional. It's just that team worked that year.
Were they dysfunctional? Okay, so this I'm trying
dysfunctional
to figure out
not in the sense where it's like, oh, it's so bad, but more so like I don't. We talked about Mike Brown and Monty McNair. Like, hey, this seems like they're not on the same page as far as the teams they're trying to build and all that. Like, I mean that. Like, they were never on the same page. I feel. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was ever a cohesive unit where they were able to build off of something.
And they couldn't get past it to work together.
Yeah.
And one of the things, and this is where I will blame Vivek Rana Dive, that group lacked leadership. And I know people don't want to hear this. I know people are always like, hey, get out the way and let these guys, you know, do the basketball stuff. And if I'm reading it correctly, that seems to be what Vivek did. And he did too much of that. There should have been somebody... In that situation, once you got to the summer after Beam Team 1, where the front office and Mike weren't on the same page with getting Sasha, with playing Sasha, with getting Duarte, with Kevin Herter starting and all this other stuff, and people were just doing like weird stuff here and there, there had to be somebody that said, hey, everybody cut this out, get together, on the same page so we can get back to winning or else all you guys can leave. That seems to be the problem, or they maybe not fire
everybody. Does Vivek got that in them?
Maybe not, which is actually contradictory to what all the reports always are about him. They say he meddles too much and he does too much. And I'm not, the people who may be a little closer to the situation may feel that way and may that I'm not challenging that, but to me, two things can't be equally true. He can't be meddling. What was he meddling in that off season?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know. I don't buy into the Vivek meddling stuff too. I don't know about before or whatever, but as far as Monty and stuff, like recently, like I don't think that was happening. I think the issue is that Vivek created this dynamic, though. If you want to put some heat on him, like he created the dynamic where it's Monty and Wes and just
that was a fail.
Like that
was an absolute fail.
That I think is all part of Vivek's creation and what he saw for this front office. I think it all kind of connects in one way. But I mean, I don't like you brought up the whole like the basketball guys didn't do their job and then he steps in and trades for Zach LaVine. Like I don't necessarily fault him for stepping in, but just more so he made a bad situation just like worse. Just infinitely worse, like stepping in and if he wanted Zach LaVine or whoever.
Well, even with that, wanting Zach LaVine, I don't think is a problem. Like people always talk about that like it's a problem and like Zach LaVine set this whole thing back. I disagree with that. The trade package.
I think it cut off your flexibility.
But
I would have took lesser players, role players, and I think you could have got picks and all that stuff for De'Aaron Fox, just so I can have the opportunity to make more moves this year, just not be so handcuffed to where it's like, oh yeah, 2027. Because they can, I think they'll be a playing team this year and they'll be competitive and all that, but we're just, like I said, there's no light at the end of this tunnel, just 2027. Or if they're able to just make something happen out of none.
The thing with LaVine, and maybe you could have gotten different role players and stuff like that. Maybe you could have got like what you would have gotten, in my opinion.
I would have took them being worse with like lesser players than what the season looks like it's gonna be.
But this is what I see, and maybe there's, you know, we go through it and there's different contracts and stuff like that. But I'm looking at like Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell. Devin Vassell's like on the second year of a 4 or 5 year deal. He wasn't going nowhere. You're making $28 million a year. Like, because you also got to get the, if you're going to trade Fox, which probably the mistake was, if you weren't going to keep Monty McNair around, having him execute the trade.
Yeah.
That was a mistake as well, because you should have, I don't know what you would have done in that situation, but he executed a poor trade. He got a situation where you couldn't even get no picks from Chicago. You didn't get no picks from San Antonio. You didn't get nothing back. Like, he did a terrible job. He did a terrible job of orchestrating that trade with things that didn't even have to do with the cap. Like, Zach LaVine getting him back and all this. Okay, you need the salaries to match up. There ain't nothing salary-wise with saying getting a second rounder or getting a first rounder or getting a pick swap or something like that. That's just you not negotiating well.
Yeah, like, I don't know who was in there, but also you look at it and it's kind of like, I just lost my point.
Oh.
Hold on, talk for a second. I'm going to get it back right now. I literally just lost my point.
But, so, what my thought with the De'Aaron Fox situation is, I don't know how much you are really going to get back in that situation, and if you are going to trade him, which now you're dealing with a person who you fired Mike Brown, and De'Aaron Fox doesn't even want to talk through it and wants out.
Okay, no, my point is I can't give them the benefit of the doubt for the LaVine stuff if that was the only deal you looked for. Like, we can talk about you couldn't get Vassell and Keldon Johnson and those guys, but did you even look for that, or was it just tunnel vision on Zach LaVine and that's it? Because if that's the case, then yeah, I can't give you the benefit of the doubt of nothing else being there. If you didn't look for it, it's like, yeah, we want Zach LaVine, then yeah, like that's pretty bad.
That's fair, but
that's where the issue stands for me. Like, if you looked around and the Spurs weren't giving you nothing, the Rockets didn't want to give you nothing because he wasn't going to sign a long-term deal, this and that, now we're just stuck with Zach LaVine, this is what we can do, then fine. I didn't love the idea of holding on to Fox through the end of the season. At that time, hindsight may be a little bit different, but I'm going to stick to that take. So if like Zach LaVine was the last option, fine. But if he was the first and only option for you, that's a mistake, and whoever was leading that has to wear that, I guess. That's where the problem comes for me, I guess.
That's fair. We'll talk a little bit more about this, man. We got James Hamm coming up at 3 o'clock. We'll ask him the situation and just kind of rehash this thing again, man, because ESPN opening up old wounds, and where did this actually start? I know a lot of people think it started with Zach LaVine and asking for Zach LaVine, but I feel like it started way before that with the decision that was made or the decision that was not made with Monty McNair, Mike Brown, and everything that went on that summer. So we'll get into all that, man. It's D'Lo and KC on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320. So back here on D'Lo and KC, ESPN 1320, we got James Hamm coming up in a little bit. And what we do from time to time, and especially on a day like July 23rd, okay, when the Giants have already played, we talked about the Giants. Training camp started. 49ers are back at it. Juwan Jennings is on the field. Raiders training camp started. We talked about them a little bit. We rehashed some of the old disasters of the Kings. And we've been trying to figure out, like, get into the minutia of the situation a little bit more. And I asked during the break, I asked the question, did De'Aaron Fox use the Mike Brown firing as an excuse to do something he wanted to do anyway, which was leave Sacramento? And it's impossible without actually talking to Fox. And even if you talk to Fox, who knows if he's going to be completely honest with you. Not that I'm not calling him a liar or nothing like that, but maybe
just, you have to know, be on his team to know.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't with him, Rich Paul, and the rest of his team and, you know, months before to figure out, hey, this is what you really want to do, and this we need to look at. But It was two things that we do know. Three things that we know. De'Aaron Fox told them, told the Kings during that offseason when I think there was an issue with Mike Brown wanting a contract extension. Somehow, some way, I don't know if they talked to him. I don't know how that word got back. But De'Aaron Fox let it be known he don't want to play for another coach. If Mike Brown is fired, he's going to want out. So they fire Mike Brown in the middle of the season when things are going all bad.
All right, gave him an extension. He didn't want to while there.
Gave him an extension. Yeah, he didn't want to do that either. So they try to, from my understanding, they try to have a conversation with Fox and his team after Mike Brown is fired. This is something that I've said a number of different times. I said, once Mike Brown is fired, you got to have a conversation with Fox and be like, hey, I know this is the situation. I know what you said, but let's revisit this. This was the thought process behind it. We still want you here, all this other stuff. From my understanding, they reached out to have that conversation, and Fox said, no, I don't even want to have this conversation. Okay. All right. For me personally, I want to be – there's nothing wrong if he wants to leave Sacramento. I want to be perfectly clear with that. There's nothing wrong. That's his prerogative. He's been here for a while. Maybe he's got other things that he wants to do. Maybe he doesn't believe in the organization or whatever. That is perfectly fine. He could have felt that way a year and a half before. But if they're saying, hey, we weren't winning, you know, we had to make a move, but we want you, let's sit down and talk and figure out if there's something that we can work through. I know what you said in the summer, but we really want you here. Let's talk about this. And he's like, No, we don't even need to hear from you. I don't even need to hear from you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's kind of odd.
Yeah, but also I understand being fed up at work. And just sometimes you just get to a point where it's like, all right, it's just, I'm over it, blah, blah, blah. Like, try to make, like I said, he was there for 8-7 years or however long it was. He wasn't just there for a short time. Like, he's been there for Vladdy and all that stuff or whatever. Mm. And it's kind of like, maybe he just got to a point where he finally reaches breaking points. Like, I'm with Mike. That's fine. The rest of the team don't like it, but just, we need to stick with the guy finally. Mm. Then do that. He's like, all right, I'm cool. Like, you guys do what you're going to do, but I'm pretty fed up and just done with what that, what this is. Like, I get that too, I guess.
That's, and
maybe that's what it is. I don't necessarily think he was on his way out or just had his mind out before Mike got fired.
Mm-hmm. Well,
before people realized that Mike didn't necessarily have the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think Fox was aiming his way out before that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once the stuff was going down, like, minds changed, things like that. But that's ultimately what I think.
So then you brought up a good point of they start, and here's where the whole aspect of he potentially used the Mike Brown situation as a way out to do something that he wanted to do anyway. And that's not what I'm saying. It's just, I'm just saying the potential.
Yeah, I'm talking about that.
Kings start winning. Kings win like 10 of 11 games. And the guy that you wanted to express that, hey, we still want you here. Can we talk about what's going down? Because we still want to make this work. And he says, no, I don't want to talk to you. All right, he doesn't want to talk to us. All right, man, I don't know who initiated the call or whatever, but let's take the phone call and let's see. Okay, well, I'm just throwing out a team. All right, Milwaukee, are you interested in De'Aaron Fox? And that's like the tenor of the conversation. And then all of a sudden, oh, what? Hey.
Yeah, it got messy. I didn't say it didn't get messy.
Well, get me the hell out of here then. Get me the hell out of here. If you're going to trade me, I don't want to be here. Fine, get me out of here. Wait, I didn't say all that. I didn't say all that. It has vibes of
Look, bro, plays were ran here, all right? We know that. Plays were ran here. I don't know whatever, but plays were ran here, obviously.
I'm just giving both a scenario. By both. As I'm not giving a scenario. I'm not saying this is De'Aaron Fox. I'm just we're on the conversation. I've been talking for 4 hours straight.
Yeah,
we're gonna continue to talk.
You know, it hypotheticals and stuff.
It has the vibes of somebody who who's in a relationship, and they're like, "Man, I'm kind of over this relationship. I'm gonna look like a jerk if I break up with this person, though." Just kind of for no reason, like they're really trying, they're trying to be a good partner, and they want to, I'm gonna look like a jerk.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
well, look, check this out. I'm gonna look like a jerk, and I don't know how to get out of this. And then the partner comes in and says, "Hey, look, you know, it's been 3 days and you've left the sink full of dishes. Like, are you gonna wash the dishes? Like, I'd like for you to wash the dishes." Oh, so you think I'm a slob? You think I'm a slob? Why don't you just break up with me then? Why don't we just break up? All right, why don't we just end this? If you think I'm such a slob, why are you with me? Let's just end this right now. Like, I just asked you to wash the dishes.
This is the Kings versus De'Aaron Fox on Lifetime.
But that's how this kind of came up. Like,
yeah.
I already wanted to leave. You just gave me a reason, and I just kind of magnified and like catapulted off that reason to do what I wanted to do anyway.
Well, like I said, that's just the game of it, though. Like, Giannis doing the little things, like, "Oh, if we don't win, you're gonna have to trade me," stuff like this. Just there's little plays you run and stuff like that, and that's just the way it goes. I feel I don't follow anyone for it.
So I, yeah.
And like I said, there's like we talked about, they fired Mike and started winning after that. Everything should be fine. But if there's also the aspect of, yeah, De'Aaron's just fed up with everything that's gone on with the Sacramento Kings and just anyone who runs it, just everything going on, there's not really much that's going to fix it. And also for him, it could be, yeah, we're winning games. It's seeing eye single for me. Like, maybe he just wasn't bought into what was happening. Maybe it was just fool's gold for him.
Yeah, potentially. The whole reason we got on this conversation was, you know, because the ESPN article talking about, you know, them trading Fox and Halliburton. And
I had that one of the top five worst moves the last 5 years.
The reason why we went down this road is just like, Halliburton, you had to do what you had to do because you wanted to get better. How salvageable was the Fox thing?
Like, at what point?
After Beam Team 1.
Oh, pretty salvageable. All Monty had to do was make some moves. I think.
But half the roster, and I'm exaggerating.
Well, I don't know
half
exactly.
Half the roster didn't like the coach no more.
Yeah, but I don't know when. That's the whole thing. We don't have like a timeline in front of us of when they turned on Mike or just soured on Mike and stuff. But after Beam Team 1, maybe if you get some wings in here and just you build off of that, and everyone's just kind of, you're winning after that too. That's the thing. You're winning. Yeah. Mike's got the guys he wants. Fox is happy because there's stability and stuff like that. Yeah, I think it could have been fixed that way.
I think, I don't know, but I think.
Like, I don't know if they, like, things just got cooked after Beam Team 1. It was like, oh, yeah. I don't know, truly.
I would, judging, I'm just hypothesizing here just off some of the quotes and thinking back. Sabonis was at the very least agitated with Mike Brown the summer after Beam Team 1.
After they lost to the Warriors in round 1?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He was agitated with it then. This is before we're talking about, hey, make a deal and, you know, get better. Like, we're already, seeds have already begun to sprout that at least one of your best players does not like the coach.
Okay, well, I will say this. I don't think, like, the moment a problem arises, it's just cooked. Like, I think there are ways to fix things or whatever, but I just don't think they ever did that. And it got to a point where it's just, now it's just beyond fixing. Where it's just, now you've gone another year with Mike, didn't make the playoffs. I'm sure guys that weren't fond of him or whatever, like, see, look what happened or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Now it's like, are you going to give him a contract extension? So like I see both sides of it, I guess.
So let me ask you this, and like I said, is I don't want to.
I don't think everyone
hypothesizing a little bit. But what if Mike Brown let it be known he wanted to move on from Domantas Sabonis after Beam Team 1, and Sabonis found out, and that relationship is done that summer.
Well, if that's the case, then yeah, you gotta. You gotta, probably move off of Mike Brown.
Then it's cooked.
I don't know when it became an ultimatum for Fox where it's like, yeah, I'm only playing for Mike Brown or nobody else. If that was the whole thing or whatever. But if Mike was out on Sabonis or whatever after that first round series, like, look what Kevon Looney did to him. We need something better. Then, yeah, maybe it was just cooked after that. Like, I've talked about over the last couple of weeks how Mike Brown has not had a good head coaching job since he left LeBron the first time. He's lost locker rooms. He's had one-and-done jobs and all that stuff. Maybe it just came down to it. Hey, Mike Brown wasn't the right guy here as well. I think both things can be true where, like, the front office, the GMs, didn't do their job either and build the best team, and maybe Mike didn't do his best coaching job or whatever. Like, now that we talked, like, we've been talking through this for months, it was just a big mess that just the dynamic wasn't going to work, and it just seems it was never going to work.
And
because if Monty believes in Fox and Sabonis and Mike doesn't, then you're just fighting the whole time.
And I would also say, basketball-wise, I'm not even here to say Mike Brown was wrong.
Yeah.
Like, he could have seen, what was on the horizon. Like, this ain't enough.
We saw the playing game against the Mavericks. Like, we can talk truthful about what we're saying.
He could have easily been like, this ain't enough. We got to – that's the position where we got to get better. You know what I mean? But – when Sabonis finds out about that and that relationship is cooked, you in a tough spot.
Well, yeah, if that's the case, then that's the case, if and all that stuff. But like, also, there needed to be more give and take with everyone in this organization.
Well, I agree.